press, the regular press, journalists from here in New York and around the country, and I want to thank them personally tonight for calling attention to the fact that here on the Tomorrow Show for the last 9 or 10 months we have tried to present true excellence in all forms of music. From Elton John to George Shearing to Wendy and the Plasmatics to Elvis Costello and Stevie Wonder to all the people who have appeared here, I thank the press for calling that their appearances to the attention of all of you, and I thank you for your support for the music that we've presented here the past 9 or 10 months. With us tonight, we'll not only have a great band, but explore an extraordinary era in the history of the 1900s. That's the 1960s, actually, we'll take a look at tonight. And one of the finest and most popular bands ever to play on any stage, and I'm talking about the Grateful Dead. They are a unit of almost mythical reputation around this country. Their story is a story of an exhilarating, volatile time in the American experience. Some people remember this as the best of times. Other people remember the 1960s and the Woodstock generation as the worst of a painful experience. It was a time of acid trips, of rock festivals, of be-ins, of Haight-Ashbury, but most of all a time of Woodstock and most of all a time of the Grateful Dead. We're not entirely certain why this upheaval occurred in American history, but it was a time when sex and music and drugs all came together and had a powerful impact on society, on our attitudes about sex, about morals, and about ourselves, and we'll look at all of that with the Grateful Dead here tonight. Now, there was another gentleman who played at Woodstock, and he'll be talking with Rona Barrett in Los Angeles tonight, and she has some other segments as well. So let's go now to Hollywood, and here's Rona Barrett to tell us what's happening on the West Coast of tomorrow, Coast to Coast tonight. Rona?
Thanks, Tom. Although it happened nearly 12 years ago, the phenomenon of Woodstock still weighs heavy on the minds of many. Tonight, Tom, joining with your look back at Woodstock, we'll have here with us another stellar participant of that historic festival, John Sebastian, formerly of the Lovin' Spoonful. Later, I'll be back with a lady whose career as a big screen sex symbol has only gotten better with age, Angie Dickinson. All that and more from Hollywood tonight on Tomorrow Coast to Coast. Thomas?
All right, thank you, Rona. Also from New York tonight, if you've been paying attention, during this week we've been doing a little series of reports on sex in the movies and how... We also wrote a fantastic book which is called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We'll meet him and get on with the Grateful Dead right after this for our sponsors and for the NBC television station. Thank you all for being here, and thank you all for being there. We'll be right back.
Some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. Come hear a pre-dawn band playing to the tide. Come on along or go alone, he's come to take his children home.
Many of you here and many of you watching have heard of or possibly have read a book by Tom Wolfe which is called The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, or The Electric Cool Acid Test. It is the electric Kool-Aid acid
wrong
test.
Both times.
That was electric cuckoo nest.
Just a second. It's helpful if the guests wait until they're introduced before they talk, all right? This book mostly concerned the activities of author Ken Kesey, the man who wrote, now here it comes, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Kesey volunteered for some of the early experiments the government of the United States was conducting with LSD. He liked it, and he began spiriting some away to conduct his own acid test parties during the early concerts of the Grateful Dead. From these episodes came the first connection between music and drugs. Would you please welcome two men who helped create what was later called...
Well, create music and drugs.
Never going to get a man.
Don't mention it, folks.
But what about the sex and politics you promised?
It's a little later.
Music and drugs.
It's a little later on when we get to the women out here. You know what I mean? Would you please welcome author Ken Kesey and his friend from the dead, singer and lead guitarist, Mr. Jerry Garcia.
Yeah.
This may be old ground for you, but not for me or some other people. How did you first get involved with the tests that were being conducted with LSD back in the late 1950s?
I had a neighbor. It was a psychologist. He was booked to do the experiments that Tuesday. He chickened out. He says, you want to do them? $20. Show up. They gave them to me. I did them from then on every Tuesday for 6 or 8 months.
Hunter was in on those, too. Yeah, they ran for a long time. Hunter was in on those, too.
There were about 120 of us down in Palo Alto. Students and unstudents that were the government wanted somebody to look in that room. They said, hey, we got a great room. We discovered this nice room. Let's get somebody to go in there and look it over.
So you went in, 8 months, looked over a room, huh?
Right, walked out. The government said, don't let anybody else in that room.
You know, the interesting thing is that the government may have started the whole LSD experience for all the people that tried that stuff, since they were the ones that set up the experiments to begin with.
Well, yeah, it's on a certain level. Maybe so. Maybe they made it available. But it was in the air. There was all those books out like Doors to Perception, all this. There was a tremendous curiosity about psychedelics, and there were some people who were able to get peyote buns in those days. Mm-hmm. Before manufactured LSD was around, and so the psychedelic experience was known and, you know, in certain circles, I think. And there were a lot of people who were just really curious and interested in finding out what it was about and what it was like, you know. It was a matter of...
It was like the space shuttle.
Yeah, it was something to try. Yeah, that's exactly right. He's right. It was a technological improvement, you know, something new. Yeah, or a fast car, you know.
It went to Jupiter,
right? Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
It was the
right
passage back that we had trouble with.
Yeah, I understand, huh? Isn't that all? Was I correct when I said that you took some of the LSD for your own use that did not involve going into Uncle Sam's room? What I'm getting at here is how you two finally got together and set up these concerts where both the band and the audience were, as they said at the time, tripping out in order to achieve a more positive blending of music and experience.
Is that a question? I got part of that.
yeah. You work on it.
Okay.
It's dry business.
Part of it was that we were in
What are you recharging there?
It's electric.
It's German wine. The acid came from Switzerland. Go ahead.
At any rate, we were part of the same world socially, you know. I mean, that is to say, we lived in the same county, you know, and we knew some of the same people, Page, and some of the people in Kesey scene were friends of ours. And we were playing in bars and things like that, but we'd heard about Kesey and the Bus and their whole... they've been doing outrageous things for quite a while and had a big reputation for it. And for us, it was... it seemed like a real interesting thing to go and check out. We sort of were invited, in effect, by friends of ours who were staying out at Kesey's place.
We kicked them out of the place two or three times.
Yeah.
We invited them.
Yeah, right. We weren't exactly welcome guests.
Do you feel that you may have hurt yourself at all from all the experiments or experiences that you've had?
No.
Not yet.
All right, so far.
Yeah, right. What? Drugs affect me, you kidding? Huh? You feel okay, Ken? I mean, you're in full command tonight, right?
Oh, no. I think just for the sake of the record, I think that you don't get anything free. Everything bruises something, and so you trade off.
When you were playing, and I ask this because I've talked to musicians who've been around, let's face it, you know, dope is a part of the music world. It's part of the world, period.
Part of the world.
And I had one guy in here one night whose name escapes me, but I would you like one too? But it was Ted Nugent, and he said, you know, I don't use that stuff because I've seen a lot of musicians use drugs, and they're not able to play. They lose their place. Were you able to function playing music while you were on LSD?
Well, not in a conventional way. I mean, you know, that is to say that a lot of you certainly lose a lot of stuff. It's something I wouldn't do professionally, you know what I mean? Now I feel more of a sense of responsibility to at least be able to be in command, to be able to play physically, mm-hmm. you know. And there's this, the nice thing about the acid test was that we could play or not in the acid test, and a lot of times we would get we'd be too high really to play, and we'd play for maybe a minute.
That's what we'd
and then we'd lose it, you know, and we'd have to leave.
But it felt like hours.
It's too weird for me. You know, yeah. But on the other hand, sometimes we would play, and since there was no pressure on us, I mean, people didn't come in to see the Grateful Dead; they came for the acid test. It was the whole event that counted. So we weren't in the spotlight, and therefore the pressure wasn't on us. So when we did play, we played with a certain kind of freedom that you rarely get as a musician. I mean, not only did we not have to fulfill expectations about us, but we didn't have to fulfill expectations about music either. So in terms of being, you know, being able to experiment freely, you know, it was amazing, amazingly great for that, on that level.
Also, to now keep make it on the drugs.
Okay, and make it a short also, because okay. I've got the commercial waiting. Okay,
okay, but wow. Is there was a lot of other stuff going on in the same
really?
Kind of consciousness expansion area that musically, artistically, and drama. And this was part of a movement that was happening in the 60s. And not the main part of the movement.
Okay. By the way, do you see what happened then as just a moment or the starting of a trend or a tradition or an experience in this country that still goes on? No, I'll talk to you and the guys about it later, but mm-hmm. I just want Ken's opinion on that.
I think it was the beginning of a real, true revolution that's still going on. Mm-hmm.
And you're still a part of it, right, big guy?
Sure.
Okay.
We can't quit the mob.
No, that's right. We will continue from New York and Los Angeles after these announcements with the great show guys. Stick around.
Slow, it takes time to pick a place to go and just keep trucking on.
While I have a moment of peace and quiet, may I say that all the songs being done by the Dead tonight are from a new double live album, which is called Reckoning, the first of which is entitled On the Road Again. Would you please welcome the Grateful Dead? Here we are.
Because we're doing it. I love you. Goodbye.
here tonight, which happened in a muddy field in New York State, 50 miles away from the nearest town. A dairy farmer named Max Yasger, remember him, leased his field to a group of rock promoters, and overnight he became a part of rock history. Nearly 500,000 rock fans showed up on August the 21st, 1969, to attend the Woodstock Music and Arts Fair. There was a torrential downpour on the second day. Three people died, two people were born, and there was one fist fight between Abbie Hoffman and Peter Townsend. The Grateful Dead played Woodstock, but so did a man named John Sebastian, who is standing by in Hollywood now with Rona Barrett. Here's John Sebastian, and here's Rona.
Thanks, Tom. John Sebastian's music was one of the most wonderful grace notes to the 60s. As the creative force behind the Lovin' Spoonful, his songs, particularly Do You Believe in Magic, defined an era. He was an unexpected guest at Woodstock, and his warm and winning performance can be seen tomorrow night when NBC airs a special on that festival. Since that time, he has gone on to be a composer for movies, television, and Broadway. Today, he's working on a musical version of the children's classic, Charlotte's Web. Good evening, and it's nice to meet you.
It's nice to be here.
How did you get to Woodstock when you weren't expected?
Well, I got there by helicopter. I just happened to see at an airport a fellow who worked as a carrier of equipment for the Spoonful, who was then working for the Incredible String Band, who said, "You want to get to Woodstock? This helicopter's the only way to get there." So I jumped in and arrived in the middle of the throng shortly after that.
And of course, John, you weren't a scheduled performer, but then you turned out to be one of the great performers at that wonderful event.
Well,
how did that happen?
Very nice of you. I was really an audience member and simply went to be there because it seemed like a moment that everybody who enjoyed music should be there. And I was asked to play totally by accident when the stage got so full of water that they were afraid to put amps on. So Chipmunk ran up to me and said, "Look, we need somebody to hold them with an acoustic guitar while we fix the stage, and you're it." So I borrowed a guitar from Timmy Harden and went on.
So much has been made of that event. I mean, the word and the term Woodstock has really become part of our vernacular. Yeah. Do you think too much was made of Woodstock?
Well, perhaps too much of the wrong things were made of Woodstock. I remember coming back from this event, which I had enjoyed tremendously and had been so proud of everybody that was part of this generation of people that I'd grown up with. Here were these accounts of the mud and drugs rampant. And of course, all of it was true, but that was somehow not the point. The exciting part was this communal atmosphere, going from sitting around small tables in little coffee houses to suddenly 500 or however many 100,000 people. That's still up to conjecture, I guess.
Do you think the media just never quite understood what Woodstock was really all about?
Well, not at that point. I don't think they did.
But now, of course, they do. You think they put it in its proper perspective?
Well, I don't know. It seems like every year I get a call right about this time of the year to talk about Woodstock, and it always seems to be the furthest thing from my mind, so.
You mean you don't like to think about it, or you don't think about it until we remind you of it?
Well, I don't think about it too often. Frankly, as a performer, I was very unhappy with the show I put on. Because I was an audience member, I was participating freely in the psychedelia and psychedelics of that particular couple of afternoons. And really, that's not something that I can do, go get stoned before I go play. And so when I look at that piece of film, I go, "Look at John smashed out of his gourd." And the truth is that I don't think I sang very well or played very well, but somehow or another, being part of this sort of swirling mass, I came off well to the audience that afternoon because I was part of it, but not necessarily because I sang very well.
During that particular period, were you smashed a lot?
I was unable to get high before performing ever since about the first two or three years in clubs with the Spoonful, because at that point, for one thing, that's the last moment in the world when you want to be introspective, when you're sitting in front of a bunch of people trying to deliver some songs. So no, that was an unusual afternoon.
I was just wondering, you know, when we look at that a particular piece of film, most of those artists burn themselves out, but you're here. You survived. Have you ever really thought about it, why you have survived and so many of the others are really gone?
Well, I think that for one thing, I've had a very lucky life. I had wonderful supportive parents. I'm a second generation musician, so I was prepared for the realities of the road and what day-to-day on the road is. If somebody who comes from a small town who has a great gift as a musician suddenly is exposed to the road, he has no framework. Gee, my dad used to come home at 5 o'clock, sit down, have a little dinner, and now here I am. I have to figure out a way to eat before I play, maybe 3 hours, so I'm not out of breath when I sing. Then I'm so exhilarated after a performance and it's 3 a.m. and what do I do? So the solution to that was very often either drugs or staying up all night so that the next show wasn't going to be as good, and so then the drugs would come in to make the next show good. And for a lot of people, they simply weren't prepared for being a musician. Not the glamorous part, but the day-to-day part of being a musician was very difficult for a lot of people. And a lot of them were much better musicians than myself.
Well, I really thank you so much for coming here tonight, and I'm sorry we've just really run out of time. We've got to come back so we can talk some more about that time and all the new things that are happening to John Sebastian.
Well, it would be my pleasure, Rona.
Thank you. And tomorrow, Coast to Coast continues after these messages.
I need a miracle! Every day, it takes dynamite to get me high. Too much of everything is just enough. One more thing, I've just got to say. I need a miracle every day.
A short set from the Grateful Dead. Now we have two numbers. The first is called Dire Wolf, and the second is Deep Ellum Blues. Here again, the Grateful Dead. Garcia, who's the lead guitarist for the Dead, and another man who has been there from the very beginning, the rhythm guitarist, Mr. Bob Weir. Here are Jerry and Webber. I just thanked them both off stage, and I want to do it on camera for playing acoustic tonight, which means a lack of amplification. Some groups come in here, and we have a small room, as you can see, and they stack the boxes up, the speakers from floor to ceiling, and they blow us right out of here. You guys were just fantastic
Thank
and
you.
Most thoughtful of our little room here tonight, and I really appreciate that.
It's nice that I said that. thing about being able to play acoustically.
I beg your pardon?
It's the nice thing about being able to play acoustically. You get a chance to play, you know, an intimate, small situation.
Yeah, like yeah. Now, there are times when you guys stack them up. I hear you travel sometimes with 23 to 25 ton of equipment.
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
How many people does it take to get it all in and out of the
about
trucks?
20? 18 or 20, something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people on the crews of the big places that we play in. Yeah, you need it in the big, in
it's,
big
it's
places.
It's like the circus.
You were both there at the beginning when it was something Mother McCary.
Mother McCary's Uptown Jug Champions.
Yeah, yeah. Did you
a
ever?
Great band.
Damn fine jug band.
Yeah. Still is, I might add, although it's changed a little bit over the years. But did you think when you were starting that it would ever evolve into this mystique that has
Thank
come
you.
To surround the group called the Grateful Dead?
We didn't think when we were starting.
No, we didn't think. Right. Really?
I mean, we really didn't.
Right. Let me ask.
If, no plans, no expectations.
Listen, if there are no straight answers, I'll do the jokes tonight.
No, that's the absolute
Wait
truth.
A second. I got a guy who's burning his hand. Just hand it in here. How did you want your coffee, sir?
Oh, just fine.
Well, how do you like it? Huh?
That's yours.
No, this is his. That's yours.
Oh.
Okay.
Hey. The only kind of plans we ever made were like going to Egypt and playing under the pyramids. Those are the only kind of plans we ever started out with. And we actually got around to it.
It was in 1978.
Yeah.
Wasn't Ken Kesey there that night? And didn't he run up the pyramid?
Yeah, he was there. He was there, yeah.
Did he run up and plant a dead flag on
another
the
top? Guy, another yeah. One of George our Walker. Pacer friends did, yeah. George Walker did. He put a flag up there. Somebody took it, though. Somebody stole it.
Somebody actually...
Remember back in the 60s when all the parents were afraid that the kinds of music their children were listening to would somehow corrupt them and make them forevermore not worthy of living in the American society? What was going through those people's minds at the time?
Hard to tell. Phil and I had to make a long speech to Sophia's mother back then because Bob was dropping out of high school to play rock and roll, you know. We had to make sure, we had to assure her that everything was going to be okay, you know.
I knew something was fishy. Yeah, I came over to his house for practice one day, and she was walking through the yard trying to sneak off, but I just caught her. She wasn't quite quick enough. And so I said hi, and she said hi, and she quick got in the car and sped off. And then I went into the house, and there were Phil and Garcia sitting there like the cat, the canary. Finish school, Bobby.
Yeah.
Looking at the two of you, I can't believe that you both started together because you look, forgive me.
Well, I'm older than him.
Oh. I thought maybe you both started out the same age and somehow you'd progressed a little bit more rapidly than the rest of us.
I put more time in the years.
If you could hold your music, as they say, up to the light now after 16 years, what changes do you see in what you've done over the years and how have you managed to be evolutionary and stay current?
I don't think we stayed current.
You don't?
I don't think we ever were current.
Yeah, right. That's probably closer to the truth, yeah. We never were current.
I think we've been sort of singular in our whole endeavor and probably stay that way. I mean, all we try to do is just satisfy our own standards.
Yeah.
They're pretty steep.
Mm-hmm. What about changes within the music itself that you've played? How have you changed?
Well, it changes as we change. I mean, the musicians, over the years, the musicians have all gotten to be better. And our experience with each other has gotten to be greater. And our experience of doing the Grateful Dead music, whatever that is, has gotten to be, there's more time we've put in. So it's something that we're getting to be almost good at. But for us, it keeps opening up in front of us, you know, like we would never have imagined we'd be playing the music we're playing now 2 years ago or mm-hmm. 5 years ago or whatever. I mean, it keeps opening in front of us. This thing keeps it possible to do it.
May I say to you without giving away names, because I don't know all the answers, there were some people standing around the floor who said, boy, they're a lot quieter now than they were the last time I heard them. Now, that has something to do with the fact that you're playing acoustics tonight, but also something
that's
to do with...
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, but also...
You should have heard it last
big
night.
Part
oh, really?
Yeah.
We will continue with two more members of the band after these announcements from our sponsors and from the NBC television station. We'll be right back. Bob and myself, would you please welcome the two drummers from the Dead, Mr. Mickey Hart and Bill Kreutzmann. Welcome, gentlemen. I said to him right before, it's Kreutzmann, right? And what did you say back to me?
Oh, I said I didn't know how to spell it until I was in third grade.
Third grade.
It's a long name, 10 letters.
Last year, when you were at Radio City Music Hall across the street, our offices were easy now, or right above, and they were lined up out there to buy, I think, the 48,000 seats for 8 shows were going in 6 hours or something like that. Do you ever wonder what it is you do that makes people stand out there in cold, windy, sometimes rainy weather? Would you stand out there? No.
We wonder a lot. Yeah. No, but one time Gene Shalit and I were talking, and he said you had to be in New York, the Brooklyn Dodgers. You had to be in New York to appreciate it, you know. And they sort of think of us like the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know, back then.
The bums.
The bums. You know, mm-hmm. Even when we're down, we're up. You know, they give us a break. You know?
Yeah.
It's like that. And it was that kind of a.
They line up. They line up to get their dose of crazy.
What does that mean? Their dose of crazy.
Well, essentially, what we present is kind of crazy stuff.
Misfit power.
Misfit power. Right.
Are you the man who once said we are misfits who play for misfits?
He's the guy responsible for that.
It's his fault. The author of the term misfit power.
It's a great term.
Misfit power, huh? Mm-hmm. What define misfit in your term? What is it?
Well, I don't know. We just.
Any of us.
I'd be loath to try to describe.
Well,
we don't
fit in the hole, so that's why we're with each other, I guess. You know,
we get along perfectly.
We actually get along, you know, and we don't get along too much with other people. I mean, we do get along.
Outsiders, so to speak.
Yeah. Civilians.
Yeah. Yeah, people don't understand this.
If you would. That is the problem.
Do you spend a lot of time together when you're not working? Is this your life, the dead? Your family life is maybe something you have apart, but basically your life centers around this music and this group.
It's the music. Yeah. Yeah. It's the music.
Pretty much. Doesn't leave a whole lot of life left over for much else. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were to review your performance at Woodstock when you were there.
That was the worst.
That was horrible. That good, huh?
We had a lot of failures. It was amazing.
We had a lot of electrical problems.
It started to rain, and we were getting shocked.
The stage was sinking. And metal and wet. Yeah. Every time you touch something, you get these shocks.
There were people, four foot blue arc.
And there were people in back of the amplifiers hollering things like, the stage is collapsing.
Yeah, the stage is falling down.
You're melting.
Totally weird.
Our sound man had decided that the PA that they had there was no good.
No good, so
they had to set up their own. But he neglected the ground, so every time you touch your instrument, you got a horrendous shock.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the stage was collapsing, and every time you looked around, there was somebody with a camera like this.
Yeah. That was weird.
It was hard to make music.
Really weird.
Really hard.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I couldn't wait to get out of there. And besides that, the helicopters were coming through all our...
We've always blown it at important things.
Yeah, really.
The big ones always slip away.
Yeah, it's big fish.
It's probably why you're here tonight hoping for a comeback, you know what I mean?
What do you mean, come back?
Still wasn't the third
round. It's the slowest rising rock and roll band in the world.
Yeah, slow.
You know, we kind of look a lot alike.
Four of us. Yeah, wasn't paying attention, Kreutzmann.
Oh, well. Wake up, Bill.
That's third grade again.
When did you do the concert with The Who? Was that recent, you know, where you televised all over Europe?
Germany.
Now, was that fun?
Yes, it was fun. Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It was
crazy times had by all.
Yeah.
See, we never get to see The Who in bands like that because we're always playing alone. We don't play normally with other bands because we come to play for 4 or 5 hours. So we invite The Who to come to San Francisco to play with us, and they played with us. They closed the show. They invited us to Europe to play on Rock Palace, and we closed the show.
The show went all night.
Sister bands, great. If you would, you know, it's, we have sister that feeling, band. You know, yeah. Of brother bands.
Why for 4 and 5 hours? That's a lot of energy.
Takes us a long time
to warm up.
Long
time.
Like that.
And there's no hurry.
You don't even have any idea the time is going. Right, besides, it would be crazy to go out on the road and travel and go through all
and
this
play for an hour and a half.
Play for an hour and a half or 40 minutes or something. You know,
the fact is, we like to play.
Yeah,
we really love.
We're in it for the play.
Well, can I tell you something? We've loved listening. Okay.
Thank you.
This all gets to be a love feast, which it shouldn't be, but this is a very special night for all of us who work on this program because a lot of effort has been put towards this evening, and your people have been most cooperative, and you especially in this band have been most cooperative, and I thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
I wish you all success and all love in this world. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
Okay, thank you. We will continue from New York and Los Angeles right after these announcements. Stay with us. Now, announcement that's just been handed to me by the network. For fans of the Woodstock era, don't miss NBC's movie tomorrow night, Woodstock Relived. Are you guys in that movie? Not in that movie. Okay. Is John Sebastian in that movie? No? Okay. Well, anyways, tomorrow night here on NBC, Woodstock Relived. That's Friday night right here on NBC. We will continue from New York and Los Angeles after this for the NBC television stations all across America. We'll be right back. All the songs that are being done by the Dead tonight, as I say, are from a new double live album, which is called Reckoning, and here they are now with a song called Cassidy, the Grateful Dead.
Nothing to tell now. Let the words be yours. I'm done with mine.